I have a couple of comments to make, and I'll start off the Q&A. But here you can see on a slide some top takeaways, although you probably have your own. Clearly, IVR is not the plain vanilla service that I had thought it was a few years ago when I started learning how IVR was being used. It does have great advantages to overcome challenges of illiteracy and language. And the third one is an interesting one I want to ask David about, given he uses Votomobile. So you can take a look at these while I pose a question to David first. Then we'll turn to your questions. So David, how did you end up choosing Votomobile? And how easy is it to set up and use technically?
Well, it's a great question, Judy. We actually went through a process of public tendering to try to find a service provider, and we were lucky enough to be referred to Votomobile. So it was through a process of sort of public identification that we chose them. And really, what they offer is, in essence, a hosted application, which means that our program managers in those 13 countries, they can go to a single website to be able to manage their content, so to create their menus, to upload their sound files, and once they do, 15 seconds later, the people in the country where 321 is launched, they can actually hear that message. So the telephone companies trust us enough that we can make the new weather forecast sound file, upload it to the Votomobile site, and then the Votomobile site pushes it to our infrastructure in the data center of the telecom in the particular country. So, for instance, in Malawi, so it's sort of a one-stop shop that allows us to organize the content in a single hosted website. So that's a big advantage. In terms of the ease of use, we've been very, very pleased with the Votomobile application, because it allows you to create these decision trees, these menus, with sort of a drag and drop ease of functionality. But frankly, we really pushed them, because their application wasn't designed really for the 321 use case. Their application was really designed to collect survey data. So if you're Facebook and you have 10 or 15 questions, or if you're Farm Radio and you have 10 or 15 questions, part of the advantage of Votomobile is the ability to send out these automated surveys. So your phone rings, you hear an introductory message, and then you can opt in to take the automatic survey. So it was really designed as a data collection tool rather than a communication tool. So we've had to really push Votomobile to add features and functionality that could handle the decision trees that literally have something like 500 to 750 messages. But I'm happy to tell you that they've been a wonderful partner in adapting their technology, even for our use case, even for one that pushes them as much as ours does.
Thank you very much, David. This is Judy again. I have lots of questions from the audience, so I'm trying to sort through ones that I see repeated. One has to do with quality control related to content, and that's from Sylvia Alonso. And I think actually all three of you could probably address that. I did want to mention something that I've learned about the content process for Digital Green, and that is they do use peers in their low-cost videos as well as probably their voices in radio. But that doesn't mean that they let the peers just say anything. They actually have a quality control process to make sure that those that are featured are actually saying the right thing, correct advice. In the case of Awaze, it sounded like you were literally just using peer-to-peer, unmediated content exchanges, and I wonder how you address quality control there. And David, I know you are involved in content processes in various countries. So each of you, could you speak a bit about your quality control process on content?
As Judy just mentioned, we follow a moderated approach towards user-generated content, both for video and also our work with IVR, including the work with Avajde in Ethiopia, in that the content is sort of produced and moderated by these public extension systems that we have partnered with, but it is localized and socialized by the local community, so that they take like some of these kind of practices that have been vetted by, say, the research system and others. But then they share that information in the context of a local farmer sharing his or her background and her story about how they applied this or that practice and the value that they were able to realize. And then at different stages in the content production process, there are the subject matter specialists of our partner organizations typically who help to kind of ensure that the integrity of the message is maintained before it is broadcast out to larger audiences. And even when it comes to like the data and feedback that is captured from these communities, it's also not just rebroadcast straight away. There is a curation process by these same subject matter specialists, or sometimes even like lead farmer types of people who help moderate which of this should feed into being shared more broadly and inform like sort of the extension content more generally.
Thanks, Rick. And Neil, do you want to comment especially on that peer-to-peer part of your service?
Yeah, sure, Judy. So I will clarify that even in that system where farmers were responding to each other's questions, there was still a moderation step in the process. So in fact, Avajde doesn't really have do anything in terms of these peer-to-peer systems, let alone any sort of dissemination system, without some sort of moderation step, because the quality of the content is of utmost concern. In the case of that peer-to-peer system, the unique point here is that on the other side of the response are other farmers, but that being said, there still is an organization that is making sure that the responses are of quality, are accurate, and also there is, you know, a moderator is required to do administrative things, like if a responder is not responding, to make sure that they follow up with that person so that a question is responded to in a timely way. So in any case, a moderator is required, and in that case, it is as well.
Good. Thank you for that clarification. And David, can you speak a bit on your content management process? I know you've got one where the government is involved in Malawi and perhaps elsewhere, and you have to do content across sectors.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we at H&I, we don't write any of the content. I like to say that the only thing I know about agriculture in Malawi is that I like to eat the food. But at the end of the day, all of the content has to be created locally by a committee of experts. It's called the National Agricultural Content Development Committee. And this local committee has recognized experts, and it's chaired by the government extension agent. So nothing is published on 321 until it's been developed locally by the local experts and it's been approved by the government. Now, this process has its advantages and disadvantages. We feel strongly that there's some basic information that every farmer needs on demand and free access to. So think the weather forecast and crop pricing and basic advice about the different strategies as the farmer goes through the agricultural calendar. We feel like that information needs to be available. But to produce that information, you really have to have sort of a Goldilocks strategy. If your committee's too big, it takes too long to create the content by consensus. If it's too small, then there's not enough ownership. Because what we find is that the content creation process, it's a little bit like sausage making. You really don't want to watch the process, but you want to eat the sausage at the end. So the idea is to have a committee that is focused on creating this content and does so on a regular ongoing basis. And so far, we've had some pretty good success at this. I've been frustrated a little bit with the time that it takes for the content committees to produce this information. But the good news is that the basics now are up there for a pretty wide variety of crops. And now what I'd like to do is move toward making the service a little bit more focused on user-generated content, especially bringing buyers and sellers together and allowing farmers to ask some questions that aren't yet covered by sort of the static information available on 321. But Judy, you're right. We do this process over and over and over again across the different sectors, but also in different countries. So we've gotten pretty good at it at this point, and we sort of think of ourselves as air traffic controllers. And the people who are creating the content, they're the pilots. So we give them some parameters in terms of the length of the messages, in terms of some ideas about how the structure has been created in other places, but really they're flying the airplanes.
Thanks, David. Actually, I was involved in an earlier effort with four different mobile network operators in Africa. It was managed by GSMA and funded by the Gates Foundation and USAID. And the area of content management was extremely painful. And getting the MNOs, who are arch competitors, together to talk about their content process was almost too much to listen to. So I'm glad we've advanced much beyond that, and much to the help of HNI and its efforts, as well as GSMA. They learned a lot and then brought in Kabi, actually, to provide a framework for content development across countries. I have another question about content, and then I'll have one more before we're going to have to sign off, and that is integrating content across digital channels. We know that we have face-to-face extension services. We also have radio, low-cost video, text messages, voice. All of these require different sizes of messages and also are better for different kinds of communication. You're not going to teach somebody how to graft a tree over text, over IVR, but you may want to give them an alert that makes more sense over IVR rather than over, say, low-cost video. So can any of you, would you like to jump in and talk? I know you're all working on that because I know in the countries you're working on, you are rolling out other content channels.
Yeah, I can jump first. I think here at Digital Green, what we found sort of success in is by starting with these local farmer organizations, whether they be women's self-help groups, farmer cooperatives, or other types of institutions at the community level, and then partnering very closely with those extension systems, the public and private and civil society types that are involved in and already engaging these farming communities as sort of the foundation before any digital sort of like layer is introduced, whether that be a low-cost video or IVR. And the reason for that is that information in and of itself has some value, but it's much greater when that information is tied together with products and services across the value chain in the real world on the ground. And that's what existing on the ground extension systems have as their bread and butter mandate. And that's what we found like sort of success in. And then with regard to these different sorts of ICT channels, the sort of theory of change hypothesis that we're actually trying to test and evaluate in Ethiopia with this combination of radio in collaboration with Farm Radio International, video with our work, as well as Avaj Day's work with interactive voice response and mobile applications with Dimagi, is to test this hypothesis that perhaps broadcast channels of media are good for kind of general campaign awareness. And I would say IVR can do that, and also, of course, radio has a long-standing sort of ability to do that. At a large scale. mediated low-cost video that is mediated by these local extension agents amongst farmer groups tends to be more persuasive and obviously a much more richer form of communicating agronomic sorts of practices. And then, you know, IVR, again, can have a role subsequently to help reinforce sort of the messages that folks are being exposed to and be able to provide a mechanism for a question and answer. And of course, each of these modes of communication have different bits with regard to cost and effectiveness, right? Video is a rich form of communication, but is more intensive with regard to kind of like production and distribution, but can be very supportive at the local level. Whereas radio and mobile, IVR, can be much more dynamic with regard to being able to change over content much more rapidly and be able to share information that does change rapidly, whether that is weather or market types of information, but maybe doesn't communicate or has challenges when it's a more richer form of communication.
I want to thank all the listeners who have posed so many good questions, and I have a bunch I want to still answer. We're not going to be able to get to those, but you can either pose them via AgriLinks, or you can send them to me at Judy or JPAYNE@USAID.gov. And if I don't answer you, send it again. And make sure your subject line is really clear. So our last question has to do with gender. Donors, governments, others care about reaching female farmers. How do you track that? I know that I've had some discussions with each of you about this, but how are you doing that today, or what are you going to do to change that?
This is an incredibly important question to us because the reality is in most of the countries where we work, not even the telephone companies know the profile of the person who's using their telephone lines. So in some countries, when you register, when you purchase a new SIM card, you have to give biometric information. But certainly in a lot of countries in Africa, no information is collected at all. So not even the telephone companies in most countries can tell you if the person who's using the line, if it's a man or a woman. So as part of the 321 service, at the end of every key message, we ask the caller if they'd like more information on this particular subject to press 1. And when they do, we say, great, in order to get you the right information, tell us a little bit about yourself. And then we ask 3 profile questions: sex, age, and location. And we use the demographic and health survey standard scale in order to get that information. So for instance, by tranche of age or by region or district, depending on what the DHS does. Because really what we're trying to do is develop a database of frequent 321 users and then be able to say something about the profile of the people who is using the 321 service. So we were just starting this back in March in Malawi, and on my on the PowerPoint presentation, you can see the number of people who have already registered. There's something like 20,000 people in Malawi who have provided this information. So this is incredibly important to us because we need to be able to say, here is the average profile. Here's what a profile of an average 321 user looks like. Here's where they're from. Here's their age. Here's the sex breakdown. It also gives us a great opportunity then to also send survey questions back out to people in a very targeted fashion. So if we, for instance, have a partner who'd like to have survey information about women who live in the north of Malawi at this particular age tranche, we can actually work with Vodamobile to execute that automated survey in short order. We just did this with Chemonix last week, and it took us about a day and a half to get over 200 responses to a 19-question questionnaire. So the idea of profiling our 321 users is incredibly important. There are, of course, issues of confidentiality and anonymity. So all of the processes that I just mentioned, they're purely voluntary and people opt into them in exchange for instance, information that is then pushed to them?
Yeah, Judy, I can just say one thing, which is we have also adopted the same approach as David mentioned with respect to asking a multiple choice or sort of a voice survey question about gender. The other thing that we're exploring, in fact, we were just meeting with a group from IFMR in India to explore the possibility of using voice biometrics. So there are some technology companies here in India that have developed some interesting technology to identify different things from voice that's simply recorded over a phone call. So you can imagine a way to at least do gender recognition by the sound of a person's voice. And it's something that we're actively looking into.
I want to thank our presenters. They did an excellent job. I learned a lot and want to learn more. And I want to thank our participants as well.
So that wraps up this webinar on IVR's role in Ag Extension. I'd like to, again, extend a big thank you to our moderator, Judy, and to our three speakers, Rickon, Neil, and David. And thanks again to all of you for taking the time to tune into this really exciting event. And we hope you found it just as informative as we did. Really quickly, I'd like to bring your attention to the fact that we will be having our monthly Ag Sector Council on April 20th with the title of Fish, Forks, and Finance, the Importance of Wild Fisheries to Food and Job Security. I encourage you to check out the AgriLinks website if you're interested in registering for that event, which will be webinar only rather than our usual seminar webinar format. And lastly, I'd like to encourage you all to visit AgriLinks to continue this discussion. As Judy mentioned, you can post any follow-up questions on the event page itself in the comments section. And as always, you can submit resources or blog posts to AgriLinks, and feel free to send an email to agrilinks@agrilinks.org or to me personally at djames@kdad.org if you have any other points for consideration. So thank you all once again, and please enjoy the rest of your day.